Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, NFL football fans, fantasy football owners. Welcome back to another great edition of the Extra Points Fantasy Football Show, the place where you get expert fantasy advice for champions. As always, I'm your host, the NFL Exporter, Lance Goodman from NFLExporter.com. Thank you for everybody joining the show today. We're on the tail end of wrapping up our fantasy football season. We were doing a three-part year-end series to the Extra Points Fantasy Football Show, and this is going to be part two. And part one, we went through the quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end positions. Today, we're going to be talking defense, special teams, and kickers. We're going to be talking about the top waiver wire pickups. We're going to be talking about the fantasy football stock market, so what players' stock is dropping, what players are on the rise coming into the 2016 upcoming draft. And then we're also going to get into some player analytics, a very important part of the fantasy football season. We're going to take a look at what players did the most damage for you in the 2015 playoffs. And so got a great show lined up for you. As always, the website is NFLExporter.com. That's NFLExporter.com. If you go to that website, right in the left-hand corner, you'll see the logos for Facebook and Twitter, which are our social media handles. You can simply click on those. It'll take you directly to those pages. For Facebook, it's facebook.com/NFL Exporter. For Twitter, it's at NFL Exporter. And again, the spelling for all the above is NFLExporter. Also, the call-in number to the show is 626-213-5267, all right? So we've got a great show lined up today. Let's not waste any time. Let's go ahead and hop right in. Your top defenses, special teams for the 2015 fantasy football season, number one was the Denver Broncos. And I think this is a defense that came in with 7 out of 16 games in which they manufactured double digits. Now, again, this is in standard scoring. And so with that being the case, things may vary a little bit from league to league as far as how many points you get for your sacks, how many points you get for your interceptions, and so on and so forth. But your Denver Broncos, as far as standard format is concerned, which really should have balanced out as far as other formats as well, that was your top defense. When you think about the Broncos defense this year, you certainly think about guys starting up front. You're talking about Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, arguably the best pass-rushing duo in the NFL. Both of those guys can certainly get after the quarterback. When you look at the secondary of the Broncos, I think that was the strong suit of this team. When you have a great pass rush, you look back into their secondary, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris on the corners, those guys dominated all year long. Bradley Roby, he certainly made some progress in his second season playing in the nickel. And then on the back end, you had T.J. Ward. So this was a very aggressive defense, had some huge games. Like most defenses, tailed off a little bit towards the tail end of the season, but the Denver Broncos were your leading defense for the 2015 season. Next, when it came to your defenses, you were talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, and this is a unit that got off to a slow start, but coming down the stretch, and we'll talk about it when we get into these analytics, and particularly during your playoff run, this defense was huge. The Kansas City Chiefs had the most double-digit games for any fantasy defense this year. 10 out of 16 games, they hit double digits. When you think about this team coming into the season, there certainly was some question marks, but the one thing that you did know they could do was rush the passer. When you were talking about Justin Houston, Tamba Ali, Dontari Poe being that defensive tackle, again, got to a very slow start, but the second half of the season, we've seen Tamba Ali round into form to help out Justin Houston, who was pretty much doing all the work himself the first 8 games. You look at the linebacking core, Derrick Johnson's always a steady play, but when you've seen Eric Berry, their Pro Bowl caliber safety, once he got back on the field and got his feet up under him, you look at Sean Smith and a talented rookie in Marcus Peters, who was tied for the NFL lead with 8 interceptions this year. That made that unit whole, and these guys really thrive when it counted the most. Your third-ranked defense special team this year were the Arizona Cardinals. And, you know, this is another unit that I think maybe was a little bit potentially of a letdown in standard formats. Now, look, 5 out of 16 games, they got double digits, so that's not what you're looking for. It's a unit that was very opportunistic when you think about the talent that they have up front. Dwight Freeney, Lamar Woodley, those guys certainly know how to bring a lot of pressure. Cardinals very stout against the run, versatile. Their linebackers, you think about Kevin Minter, Darryl Washington, and those guys. But their secondary is really their strong suit. When you think about a shutdown cornerback like Patrick Peterson, and then you think about the depth they have with the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. You think about Jefferson and Buchanan and Johnson. They've got a ton of depth back there. And so I really like the Arizona Cardinals. Defense special teams, especially when you think about, you know, David Johnson, his ability to return kickoffs. You think about Patrick Peterson and his ability to return punts as well. Your fourth-ranked defense was the Carolina Panthers, 7 out of 16 games in double digits. Outstanding job by them. Another defense that really shined the first 8 games of the season, and then coming down the stretch run was a little bit iffy. But certainly when you think about their defense, you have to like what you see. When you think about in the trenches, Star Lewitelli, DeJuan Edwards, Charles Johnson, rookie Shaq Thompson, Jared Allen was a midseason addition. So he certainly has a depth on the front line. Their linebackers are outstanding. Luke Kelce, probably your best inside linebacker going in the NFL right now. Not only is he sideline to sideline in the running game, but also drops back into coverage and causes a lot of big-time problems. We've seen a return, an interception by Tony Romo through on Thanksgiving. He had back-to-back pick sixes in the playoffs, and so Luke Kuechly is definitely going to be one of those guys who's going to be a big-time player in fantasy football as well as an IDP format. You also have to throw in there Thomas Davis, another guy, very stout against the run, certainly can get out on the edges and help out in the passing game as well. And then the one name that really stood out for you this year was Josh Norman, the All-Pro, really made a name for himself becoming a shutdown corner early on in the season. You like the addition of Peanut Tillman, who ended up getting hurt down the stretch run. Some injuries hit the secondary, so I think that caused them to tail off a little bit. But in the big moments, this is a defense that definitely shows up. And in the right matchups, they certainly dominated. Coming in at number 5, the Seattle Seahawks, 7 out of 16 games in double digits. And look, we know for the Seahawks, their defense by now, certainly renowned. You talk about Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, the Legion of Boom, those guys still back there in the secondary making things happen, but certainly starting to see some chinks in the armor. And I think it has to do with the lack of pass rush. Cliff Averill and Ingram, Bruce Irvin, really didn't get after guys on a consistent basis. You know, the likes of K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner are always going to be there. And so Seattle, another team that when the matchup was right for the picking, there's certainly a unit that can get the job done. Next, it was the Houston Texans, and the Texans came in second. I mentioned that Kansas City had 10 out of 16 games where they won double digits. The Houston Texans had 8 out of 16 games in double digits. It really took a while for this team in general to get going, but it lets you know that the defense was the catalyst. And coming out of their bye week, or I should say coming into the last 8 games of the season, is really when you've seen this defense take form. We all know that All-Pro defensive tackle J.J. Watt, arguably the best defensive player in the NFL, he's going to cause ruckus each and every week. Javion Clowney still trying to find his spot. Brian Cushion made it through the season fully healthy. You still have Jonathan Joseph back there in the secondary. So Romeo Crennel was able to get this group, get their attention, pull them in order. And I think you see that happen a lot of times. If a team, and particularly, has a new coordinator, then at that point, you know, you may take a while for them to really get the scheme down and the buy-in and the things. But great job by the Houston Texans, who at the end of the day, even though it was a slow start, were able to live up to expectation. Next, you got the Minnesota Vikings coming in at 7th. I love what Mike Zimmer has done with this group. 6 out of 16 games in double digits. When you think about the Vikings defense up front, Sharif Floyd, Limbaugh Joseph, make it very difficult to run on Minnesota. And then when you have to pass the football, a guy like Everson Griffin is going to cause you tons of problems coming off the edge there at defensive end. We also see on the second level, you have Eric Kendricks as well as Anthony Barr, the rookie Kendricks, Barr in his second year, both UCLA products. Those guys are young talents that's got a very high ceiling. I love Anthony Barr. He's a guy who can get it done in a running game. We also seen them sprinting downfield in the game against Atlanta, coming up with a strip fumble from behind, chasing down the play. So very athletic. These guys keep their noses around the football. And then you're seeing this young secondary starting to come into place. Now, they went out and got Terrence Newman, the veteran, to kind of help balance things out a bit. He's got familiarity with Zimmer from his days in Dallas and Cincinnati. But you talk about Xavier Rhodes. You talk about Harrison Smith. You talk about Captain Munnerlin. So those guys were able to get it done. This was a very solid unit, played extremely well at home. And again, in the right matchups, this defense can really put the clamps on teams and make life difficult. Coming in at number eight was the Pittsburgh Steelers. And this was another group that patchworked for the most part. The Steelers are still a defense that's in transition mode. Again, no longer is it Dick LeBeau and James Ferrier, Troy Polamalu, Ike Taylor. Excuse me, my God, some of these guys escaped me. You know, the likes of Joey Porter, James Harrison was there this year. But, you know, Lamar Woodley, those guys, you know, Larry Foote. This was a defense, Casey Hampton, he's another guy that comes to mind. This was religiously a top 10 defense, always ranked in the top five against the run. And now they're in transition mode. So they're trying to get guys like Jarvis Jones and up to speed. We know that Ryan Shazier is a standout at linebacker, struggling a little bit with health injuries, but he's a guy who keeps his nose around the football. But in particularly, it's their secondary. Lawrence Timmons and those guys up front, ranked in the top 10 against the run, but their secondary certainly is very suspect. They picked their spots to have big plays, but that was the weakness of this unit. Nonetheless, for where you picked them up in your draft, 6 out of 16 games, you're hearing for the most part, 7 was the magic number, so you really can't have any complaints there. The Cincinnati Bengals, they're ranked 9th. They ended the fantasy season ranked 9th. Another team with a lot of talent, Geno Atkins getting back into Pro Bowl form at defensive tackle. You got Big Pecco up there alongside of him, so difficult to run the football when you have to pass. You had the likes of Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson coming after you off the edge. You have to like that Vontaze Burfict was back in the mix, stopping the run, getting after the quarterback as well. And then we took a look at their secondary. You know, veterans like Leon Hall. We've seen rookie Darquez Denard. We're seeing Dre Kilpatrick starting to come into his own now. Reggie Nelson was also tied for the NFL lead along with Marcus Peters with 8 interceptions. So a very sound group. You know, Ray Malaluga, another guy in that front 7 making things happen. And 6 out of 16 games, the Bengals defense gave you double digits. Again, another defense where you were able to pick up later in drafts and certainly were able to do their thing when you needed them to. Coming in next, you had the New England Patriots. That rounds out your top 10. Again, a team that really just doesn't blow you away with star power. I think the biggest names now, Chandler Jones, Jamie Collins, you know, Gerard Mayo was back in the mix. You look at their secondary, you see the my goodness, his name's escaping me now. If you please excuse me, you guys know I come with all this information straight out of the mental. I don't have any, you know, pregame meetings or notes and this, that, and the other to go off of. But the young cornerback, his name's escaping me, had the interception. Malcolm Butler, thank you. I had the interception in the Super Bowl last year to seal the deal. He's a guy who's certainly making a name for himself now in his second year. So you know with the Patriots in particular, they always come up with some games on their schedule. You know, the Redskins at home, the Titans at home, you know, taking advantage of teams' mishaps, turnovers, their mistakes. And in particular with Bill Belichick and company, it's really not about huge numbers. It's really about, look, stopping the run, playing tight man-to-man coverage, keeping teams to a low third down conversion ratio, and the bend but don't break rule. You see teams a lot of times get in the red zone against New England, and they have to settle for a field goal. So this is a defense that is, you know, maybe not one that you covet as far as coming out, and you're thinking along the lines of dominant as Denver or maybe Carolina or Seattle, but there's certainly a group that has enough matchups throughout the course of the season and also a high-powered offense that puts a lot of points up on the board, which is going to force teams to get one-dimensional, and that's when the Patriots can get their sacks and kind of rack up on some other areas for you. They're another defense, 6 out of 16 games. They gave you double digits. Rounding out it, we have the New York Jets coming in ranked 11th. 6 out of 16 games and double digits for them as well. This is a unit that certainly started to falter down the stretch. Started off the season really strong, but never could really put it together between injuries and guys being suspended. Starting off the year, Sheldon Richardson, their Pro Bowl defensive tackle, he wasn't there. Once he got in the mix, though, you like the talent. You think about Leonard Williams, the rookie they drafted from USC. You think about Big Muhammad Wilkerson. You think about David Harris, Calvin Pace. His name's escaping me as well. You have to excuse me. He's been there for a while now. He's finally starting to come around. I'll come back to his name in a minute. It's escaping me. But you think about Darrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, the guys they picked up at defensive backs. And then you also think about Calvin Pryor in his second year. So this was a group that was certainly very sound. And the guy's name I'm thinking about is Quentin Copels. Please excuse me. This was a very sound group. Certainly took advantage of some nice matchups. But again, coming down the stretch run, injuries really plagued this team and stopped them, from what I see, as pulling through the entire season of being a stout defense that you'd expect. And then coming in at number 12 to end out your top defense special teams for the 2015 season, it was the St. Louis Rams. Another group, 6 out of 16 games in double digits. Of course, things get started in the trenches. You think about Big Aaron Donald. You think about Robert Quinn. You think about Chris Long. And you think about Big Michael Brocker. So they have the front four that certainly can stop the run and get after the quarterback. On the second level, Tommy Ogletree, James Laurinaitis, and you love their secondary. Guys like Janoris Jenkins, TJ McDonald, those guys flying around back there. So this is a defense that certainly is, to me, one of the tops in the NFL. But their offense, very low budget, especially when no running game is manufactured on the ground by Todd Gurley. This defense finds itself one too many times, you know, just having the bridge fall out from under them. They're playing great defense. They're playing great defense, but their offense can't manufacture points. And next thing you know, they're giving it up. And so 6 out of 16 games for the Rams as well. Those were your top 12 defensive special teams for 2015. Now let's go ahead and move on to the kicker position. Your top kicker for fantasy football this year was Steven Gostkowski. No surprise that the New England Patriots, 9 out of 16 games, he's in double digits for you. You know, being attached to Tom Brady and company always is going to afford him a ton of opportunities. Coming in at number 2, Graham Gano of the Carolina Panthers. 7 out of 16 games, he's in double digits. Another guy on a team with a dominant defense. Cam Newton and company did a great job of moving the football consistently all year long. Number 3, Blair Walsh of the Minnesota Vikings. Another guy attached to a very stout defense. We know that Teddy Bridgewater in the passing game, not quite where it needs to be yet. So a lot of opportunities for Blair Walsh to capitalize when Minnesota was not able to get in the end zone on the shoulders of Adrian Peterson. He had 7 out of 16 games in double digits as well. Josh Brown of the New York Giants continues to be a mainstay, coming in ranked 4th, 7 out of 16 games in double digits for him as well. We know that Eli Manning and company certainly can move the football, but another group that has a bit of trouble scoring inside of the red zone, which opens up the door for a lot of opportunities for him. Steven Hauschka of the Seattle Seahawks, without question. He's always a guy that's going to be highly coveted. When you think about Seattle's defense, their ability to stop opposing offenses from getting on the scoreboard, keeping Seattle in good field position. And then Russell Wilson in that offense, another offense that not the highest of percentages in the red zone. This was certainly the year by far that Russell Wilson and company really were able to cash in. A lot of that had to do with their late season matchups, but nonetheless, Steven Hauschka, a guy you've seen hitting consistently from 50 plus yards in preseason, is something that made him a main attraction. How about Robbie Gould of the Chicago Bears, a name who certainly fell off the radar, but he's a guy who got back into the mix. Jay Cutler in that offense doing a good enough job moving the football, involved in a lot of shootouts. We know their defense is not quite up to par yet, so Gould able to take advantage of opportunities. Hey, he had 7 out of 16 games in double digits as well. Coming in next, it was Justin Tuck of the Baltimore Ravens. He had 7 out of 16 games where he was in double digits. And again, Joe Flacco and company, especially after Steve Smith Sr. left out with an injury, this was an offense that certainly could move the ball, but not the best at capitalizing on third down conversions and in the red zone. So that opened up the door for Justin Tucker to give you 7 out of 16 games in double digits as well. Next was Cairo Santos of the Kansas City Chiefs, another guy attached to a very stout defense. Alex Smith and company, we know they're not an offense that traditionally is going to have a ton of high conversion on third downs. They're also a offense that really struggles in the red zone to hit pay dirt. So Santos, a guy who you certainly expect to see in the top 10, being attached to Kansas City and Alex Smith in that offense, that certainly struggles a bit to get in the end zone. And then rounding out your top 10 is Brandon McManus of the Denver Broncos. 7 out of 16 games in double digits for him as well. Again, Peyton Manning in that offense, up and down for them. We even seen Brock Osweiler in that sometimes. And, you know, this was a guy, McManus, who came in as arguably your top ticker, kicker, along with Steven Goskowski, due to the fact that he was with Peyton Manning in that offense. And coming down the stretch run last year, we've seen Connor Barth, a guy take full advantage, have a ton of huge double-digit games for Denver because they couldn't quite get it in the end zone. This year, Denver really struggled to consistently give him opportunity. So he's a guy who could be much higher up on the ladder. Nonetheless, Brandon McManus is rounding out your top 10 for your top kickers for 2015. Let's run to a quick commercial break. When we come back, let's jump on a waiver wire. Let's talk about the top waiver wire pickups for the 2015 NFL fantasy football season. Don't go anywhere. It's the NFL Exporter. You are listening to Extra Points. All right, everyone, welcome back to the Extra Points Fantasy Football Show. Once again, your host, Lance Goodman from NFLExporter.com. You're listening to part two of our season-ending three-part series of the Extra Points Fantasy Football Show. Once again, make sure you get with me on Facebook.com/NFL Exporter. Shout out everybody over on the Facebook page. We had a ton of fun this season. A page full of champions is what we ended with. That was certainly our goal starting off the season. And so a great job by everybody over there. That's NFL Exporter. Facebook.com/NFL Exporter. Again, the spelling is NFL, E-X-P-O-R-T-E-R. The easiest way to get there is simply by going to NFLExporter.com. Clicking on the Facebook or Twitter handle, whichever social media you're on, and simply following or adding me there. We also have the Extra Points Fantasy Football page on the website as well. You'll be able to check out a lot of great segments we had this year. Certainly you have to give big-time thanks to guys like Adam Rank from NFL Network, Mike Leiner from NFL Fantasy Football, James Morris from NFL.com, Mike Florio from Roto Experts, our favorites there, Ashley, Brandon, and Courtney from Her Fantasy Football, Jeremy Johnson from Game On TV Sports Show. And we just had a great banner season here. It was outstanding, giving you that championship expert advice that you need to win. All right, now look, let's move over to your top waiver wire pickups for 2015. We'll get started at the quarterback position. I don't think there's any question that Blake Bortles of the Jacksonville Jaguars is a guy that, especially if you had a Tony Romo, maybe Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning are some quarterbacks that come to mind. Andrew Luck's another guy who certainly was out with injuries. Blake Bortles was a savior to a lot of people's seasons. I know I myself in my main league had Eli Manning. Just was very uncomfortable with the inconsistencies. Eli Manning all over the place this football season. You really didn't know what you were going to get in any particular weak point in time. And, you know, I'm looking at these waiver wire pickups here at quarterback. Let's go ahead and tie it in. Once upon a time, early in the fantasy football season, let's just call it week four or five, the likes of Derek Carr of the Oakland Raiders, Tyrod Taylor of the Buffalo Bills, Andy Dalton of the Cincinnati Bengals, perhaps even Carson Palmer of the Arizona Cardinals. You know, those were the big-name quarterbacks to come off the board at that time for owners looking for quarterbacks. Blake Bortles was kind of that next guy in line that when you looked at his stats and numbers, you said, you know what? Here's a guy that, you know, despite maybe a turnover or two, he's right around 20 points per game, 250 to 300 yards, 2 to 3 TDs, and, you know, maybe another 30 to 40 rush yards on the ground is what you're seeing with Bortles. And that's ultimately what attracted me to him. Little did we know that he was going to heat up the way he did, and he got in his own, got on the same page with Hearns and Robinson, and he was just off and running from there. And so Blake Bortles now goes from a waiver wire guy to certainly a top 10 fantasy prospect for the upcoming season. How about Kirk Cousins of the Washington Redskins? This guy was absolute money for owners in the playoffs when it counted most. For the most part during the season, was matchup based. If he was playing at home and the matchup was right, we've seen it against Tampa Bay. We've seen it against the Giants. We've seen it against the New Orleans Saints. Those were the matchups where he thrived the most. But as you'll see here shortly when we get into player analytics, he certainly was the guy who put up some big numbers in the fantasy playoffs. And he's another guy that goes from a waiver wire pickup to somebody who I think, as long as he stays with the Redskins, and they bring those skill position players back healthy, he's a guy who fantasy owners will be giving some serious consideration to when it comes to getting a starting quarterback as well. Ryan Fitzpatrick of the New York Jets, he certainly found his groove coming down the stretch when you looked at what he did in matchups against the New York Giants, the Miami Dolphins, the Tennessee Titans. He's certainly a guy who I think was more of a spot play, wasn't as consistent as Bortles, but certainly in the right matchups, he got the job done. And that's what it's all about, exploiting matchups for what they're worth. And he most certainly did that. I mentioned to you about Derek Carr, outstanding job by him. 30-plus TD passes this year. He's a guy who's certainly on the rise. When you look at now having Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree over there, he's another guy who fantasy owners are going to have a lot of interest in. And I like the progress. As a rookie, 21 TD passes, 33 TD passes as a sophomore. I like Derek Carr an awful lot. Tyrod Taylor, another guy, dual threat, can get it done on the ground. Also showed nice ability during the air, had the least amount of interception thrown for any quarterback with 300-plus pass attempts, so you don't have to worry about him with a ton of turnovers, can escape pressure and score with his feet, but also throws a very nice football, very accurate thrower. Now he has his main target in Sammy Watkins going, and he's a guy who certainly is going to draw a lot of interest from owners next year. And then we talked about Andy Dalton, and if you go back to the NFL Exporter Big Board, you think back to the preseason, this was my dark horse. This was the guy who, look, known for making tons of mistakes, known for shrinking in the hugest moments, but when you looked at the talent around him, you couldn't deny it. You knew if he could keep the turnovers down, that he had a chance to really make some things happen, especially for a quarterback who most owners were willing to bypass due to being burnt from him in past dealings. But 25 TDs and 6 interceptions and missed the last 3 games of the season. So he could be much higher up the QB rankings ladders. But when you have an A.J. Green, a Marvin Jones, a Mohamed Sanu, we've seen Tyler Eifert emerge. You got Giovanni Bernard out the backfield, Jeremy Hill, him and Bernard running the football. Too many pieces in place for Andy Dalton to fail if he could limit his turnovers, and he certainly was able to do that this year. Moving over now to the running back position, I don't think there's any question. A guy who really came in and saved a lot of people's seasons. We're talking about Devonta Freeman of the Atlanta Falcons, one of the top, if not the top, waiver wire pickup this year. And great job by him. I mean, really came in. He had about a 4 to 5 week stretch where he just burnt up the charts so much to the point that nobody was ever able to catch him, even with him missing the coming out of a game early and missing the game the following week, nobody still was able to catch him. Dual threat ability, no doubt he's going to be ranked inside of the top 10 at fantasy running backs next year. D'Angelo Williams of the Pittsburgh Steelers, you'll see it when we get over to our player analytics. He was the most efficient player in fantasy football this year by far. 9 out of his 11 starts, he's in double digits, and he really put up Le'Veon Bell type numbers, if not even better. And at the age of 33, you just didn't think he had any more left in the tank, but he thrived in this system this year for the Steelers. Another free agent pickup who came in and did your team wonders. Can you imagine owners out there who maybe picked up Jeremy Hill and Alfred Morris? I had that poor combination on my team, or maybe a guy, you know, drafted C.J. Anderson and Marshawn Lynch or Eddie Lacy. And for you to be able to potentially end up with free agent pickups like Devonta Freeman or D'Angelo Williams in your backfield, both of those guys, man, you were in serious business. Chris Johnson, David Johnson of the Arizona Cardinals, both of those guys, very effective. Chris Johnson held the most of the workload for the majority of the season, did a great job there. But David Johnson really put the icing on the cake late in the season. 4 out of his last 5 games, he's in double digits, including that huge game we'll all remember with a 187 and 3 TDs against the Philadelphia Eagles. That was huge for a lot of owners. Danny Woodhead's another guy, seems to every year, if you don't catch him in late rounds, you grab him off the waiver wire. Very productive in that pass-happy San Diego Chargers offense. Darren McFadden of the Dallas Cowboys, another guy, one of your top handcuffs. Joe Randall, not able to keep hold of his starting position. McFadden here to pick up the ball. And I tell you one thing, with the healthy Tony Romo and Dez Bryant there next year, he's the guy that's going to be chomping a bit at the top 10. Had a very solid season. And again, for a guy that you drafted late or picked up off the waiver wire, certainly was able to come in and hold down a full workload, and that made him a threat every single week. Ronnie Hillman, sure, inconsistent, but still was the top running back in Denver points-wise, had about 6 or 7 out of 16 games in double digits. That was pretty much the protocol this year with the mess you had at running backs, especially up at the top. And so Hillman's another guy, especially in the right week, paid some nice dividends for your team. How about Thomas Rawls, Carlos Williams, a couple rookies. Rawls did his thing for the Seattle Seahawks. If he didn't get injured in week 13, he's a guy who I believe would have been right up there at the top 10, over 800 rushing yards, showed the ability to catch out of the backfield with Marshawn Lynch out of the loop. This is a guy who certainly thrived to make the most out of his opportunities. And then rookie Carlos Williams from Florida State for the Buffalo Bills. You had to love what you've seen out of him. In his first 7 games played, he found himself in the end zone. Great change of pace back. Power backs who got a lot of the red zone opportunities and also caught a touchdown. I've seen a nice set of hands on him out of the backfield against the Giants where he ran a wheel route, was able to beat a linebacker and catch it over the shoulder. Tyrod Taylor laid it right in there for him. So this guy's got a ton of potential. I think moving forward, you just want to know a little bit more how defined his role is going to be in that Bills offense, because with Shady McCoy there making the big bucks, you'd have to figure he's going to be the lead back there. James White, Javorius Allen, both of those guys did some nice things for you as well. James White came in for Deion Lewis. Took him a couple weeks, or I should say, you know, took a couple weeks in general for him to really kind of get in his comfort zone and maybe Tom Brady to get comfortable with him. But once they did so, certainly the last 4 to 5 games of the season, he was an excellent flex play for you. And then Javorius Allen did a nice job. You think about the games that he had, you know, against the Cleveland Browns, against the Miami Dolphins, against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But he's certainly a guy down a stretch run. Had some tough matchups against Kansas City and Seattle. You'd expect that. But certainly a young guy, again, showed the dual threat ability, able to run on the ground, but nice out of the backfield. And I think that bodes well. That is the direction that fantasy football is going with the running back position. And then how about Tim Hightower of the New Orleans Saints? Mark Ingram went down with an injury that really caught everybody off guard. All the chatter and noise was about C.J. Spiller, but over on the Facebook page, and I've got to shout those guys out again, we hit the streets hard. Tim Hightower ended up being a general consensus guy to get, or get both of them, and Hightower paid big-time dividends, especially in the championship week for many owners in week 16, where he had a huge game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then we move over to the wide receiver position. How about Allen Robinson of the Jacksonville Jaguars? It's not a secret anymore. Him and fellow receiver Allen Hurns, both over 1,000 yards, 20-plus combined TD catches between the two, and these guys are outstanding. Robinson, more of your big play guy, had the gaudy 16.7 yards per reception average, a huge target in the red zone, great leaping ability. He's right up there as far as skill set is concerned with your top receivers in the league. And then Hurns, crispy route runner, real sleek guy, knows how to really get slim on those posts. And those are Blake Bortles' 2 favorite weapons. Both of those guys are going to continue to shine. Doug Baldwin had an outstanding playoffs. We're going to talk analytics in our next segment. But he got red hot. And I think the main question here is, have we seen what we needed to see? Can we now bank on and depend that Russell Wilson is going to make Doug Baldwin his primary target in the passing game? That is something in fantasy football training camp this upcoming July, we're really going to have to decipher, because that's going to really determine where you end up taking Doug Baldwin in fantasy football live draft. If you recall, before maybe week 12 or 13, Baldwin was the guy, you know, basically Seattle doesn't have a primary receiver. So 1 week it was Kurse, 1 week it was Baldwin, 1 week it was Jimmy Graham. You just kind of seen the rotating cycle. But towards the tail end of the season, Russell Wilson got committed to Doug Baldwin, and it paid off in a major way. Sammy Watkins is another guy that a lot of owners gave up on after a slow start and signs of inconsistency. But down the stretch run, once Watkins was made the primary receiver and got the double-digit targets that all the big-time receivers in the game gets, he was nothing less than spectacular, one of the best wide receivers for you in the playoffs. This guy's got top-end speed. Doesn't take long for him to strike pay dirt at all. And then how about the receivers from the Cardinals? John Brown, Michael Floyd, nice free agent pickups. Guys can get it done. Brown, more of your big play guy with the big time speed running down the field. Floyd, more of a possession receiver, but a nice threat in the red zone. And once Carson Palmer got the chemistry going with those guys, that offense certainly was clicking on all cylinders. And then you move over to the tight end position. Jordan Reed of the Washington Redskins was your second-ranked tight end. Did an excellent job becoming Kirk Cousins' primary receiver on all that underneath stuff. Can also get vertical. Jordan Reed, if he can avoid injuries, which is something that plagued him early in his career, he's certainly going to be a top-five fantasy tight end coming into next year, as well as these this whole list here. You talk about Gary Barnidge of the Cleveland Browns and the job he did. I really liked that he was recession-proof, and his toughest matchups against the Broncos, against the Seahawks, against the Arizona Cardinals, he still held true and was able to put up some nice numbers. This guy's nice route running, got a nice set of hands. Gary Barnidge is no longer a secret. Delanie Walker of the Tennessee Titans, what a year he had. You're talking about 94 grabs for up over 1,000 yards, 5 TDs, or his numbers would have been even bigger. He's got Marcus Mariota at quarterback, who's super accurate with the football, loves feeding his tight ends. I love what Delanie Walker was able to do for your lineup this year. Tyler Eifert, we talked about him. If it wasn't for him missing 3 to 4 games due to injury, he very well could have led the NFL in receiving or touchdowns. Had 13 on the year, but again, missed 3 or 4 games, so he could have been up towards 16 to 17. Nonetheless, when you get that production from the tight end position, and he truly has the luxury of a guy like A.J. Green being outside, which is going to allow him to work freely underneath against linebackers and safeties. And then Ben Watson, how about reviving his career with the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees? If you remember Watson, he's a veteran. He was around with the New England Patriots back with Tom Brady. Well, made a resurgence this year coming into the season. We all thought it was Josh Hill of the New Orleans Saints who was going to be that guy, but Benjamin ended up getting a call and he answered it in a major way. 725 yards, 6 TDs. I like Benjamin Watson. He's a great fit in this New Orleans offense. And if Drew Brees returns, then Watson is a guy who's going to have some elevated draft stock as well. Let's run to another quick break. When we come back, we're talking player analytics. We're going to find out what players made it happen for you in the fantasy football playoffs. It's the Extra Points with the NFL Exporter. Stay tuned. All right, NFL football fans, fantasy football owners, welcome back to the Extra Points Fantasy Football Show, the place where you get expert fantasy advice for champions. As always, again, I'm your host, Lance Goodman, NFLExporter.com. Look, let's go ahead and talk player analytics. And what I'm talking about here is player efficiency. We're talking about the players who got it done when it counted the most for you, which was weeks 13 through 17. So for owners whose championship game was in week 16, your last regular season game was week 13. Your playoffs were weeks 14 through 16. For those owners who are in leagues that went all the way to week 17, your fantasy football last week was week 14, week 14, and then your playoffs went through week 17. Starting at the quarterback position, these were your top quarterbacks. It was Kirk Cousins of the Washington Redskins, averaged 29.3 fantasy football points in his in three out of those 5 weeks. So again, let me try to bring a little bit more clarity to it. So we're basically talking about what quarterbacks did for you in weeks 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. And we're going to go through each position. So again, your money rounds, week 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, what players averaged the most points per game, which guys had the most amount of games within those five where they put up the big numbers for you. And Kirk Cousins was that guy. Three out of his 5 games, he averaged 29.3 fantasy points per game, and he had 2 games that he didn't play too well. So if you had Kirk Cousins in weeks 13, he didn't play that well. Week 17 was really an aberration. He really could have put up some solid numbers, had 19 points just through one half of football against the Dallas Cowboys. So if you had Kirk Cousins for your playoff run, in particular in weeks 14, 15, and 16, this guy was unbelievable and stacked the big-time numbers for you. Another guy who certainly made it happen, we're talking about Russell Wilson of the Seattle Seahawks. Wilson, big for you, had 4 games in the playoffs of 20-plus points, averaged 27.25 points in those games where he had 20 points or more, and with the exception of week 16, and even in that one, he still managed 18 points. Russell Wilson was a hot hand that you were certainly able to ride to a championship. Another guy that's going to stand out for you is Cam Newton. the Carolina Panthers. Newton had 4 out of 5 games where he's 20-plus points. Really only hurt you in Week 16 where he had 13 against rival Atlanta, but averaged 28.6 points per contest in the fantasy football playoffs and in your money round. That's the type of production that you need to get the job done. Blake Bortles is another guy that got it done for you, had 4 out of his 5 games where he's in double digits, and he got it done. Week 17 against the Texans, I think you kind of could read in between the lines on that one. You knew J.J. Watt was going to cause issues, but outside of that, Bortles averaged a gaudy 25 fantasy football points per contest, and again, those are the type of numbers that's going to bring home a championship. Drew Brees, he's another guy that took full advantage of his matchups, averaging 24 points per contest in weeks 13 through 16. In week 17, 16 points, so you'll take that on an off day. But Drew Brees really took advantage of matchups and cashed in the way that you certainly hoped for. And then Matt Stafford, he's another guy that certainly came through when you needed him. Had 3 out of his last 5 games, 20 more points or more, averaged 22.3 points per contest. And that was in weeks 15, 16, and 17. So he was balling out for you when you needed it most. In weeks 13 and 14, not what you want to see, but certainly you'll take 15 fantasy points per contest. Ben Roethlisberger is the guy that falls right in the middle. Had 3 games of 20-plus points. In those games, he averaged 26.3, but he also had 2 games in which he really hurt owners. And in those 2 games, he only averaged 6.5 fantasy football points, and that is not going to get it done. And I know for many owners, week 16 at Baltimore, that just killed guys. Some of the quarterbacks who were ranked inside of the top 10 that you've seen take a slide, we're talking about Carson Palmer. In 3 out of his 5 matchups, only averaged 12.3 points per contest. Aaron Rodgers only had 1 good game the last 5 games of the year. His other 4 games, he only averaged 11.75 points per contest. And then Eli Manning, he's a guy that you're always going to find struggling again with consistency. He had 3 games in which he did not perform well, averaged 12.6 points in those games, and those were weeks 13, 16, and 17, and that's the time that you needed him most. Phillip Rivers, another guy that just really had a hard time because of matchups. Phillip Rivers is now a matchup-based guy, only had 1 game in which he was up in 20 points or more. His other 4 games, 11 points per game, including negative 4-1. So that's not going to get it done. And then Derek Carr, although he had a great year, did not have 1 single game the last 5 weeks of the season where he was up over 20 points, only averaged 14 points per contest. So that's the type of production that you do not need to see. But by far, Cam Newton, Kirk Cousins, Blake Bortles, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Matthew Stafford, those were the quarterbacks to get the job done for you when it came to fantasy football this year. Now we move over to the running back position, and we got some numbers here that are certainly going to jump off the page at you. Now, look, again, we're just strictly basing this off of the last 5 games of the season. Your top fantasy running back was David Johnson of the Arizona Cardinals. Outside of a bad performance in week 17, Johnson in weeks 13, 14, 15, and 16 averaged 21.5 fantasy points per contest. That was better than any player in fantasy football, so great job by him. Next, it was D'Angelo Williams. I mentioned to you his efficiency. 9 out of 11 games where he's up in double digits during the last 5 weeks. 17.5 is what he averaged, and I'm pretty sure he would have found double digits if it weren't for an injury taking him out of the game in week 17 at Cleveland. Todd Gurley's another pleasant surprise, another guy who got the job done. 3 out of his 5 matchups the last 5 weeks of the season were in double digits. 10 out of 12 regular season games, he's in double digits. And he averaged 17.6 points per contest, but in the games that he did not fare well, and it was really only 1 in week 13, he only had 4 points, so that's certainly not going to get it done. Another guy that stands out, actually, you're talking about Matt Forte of the Chicago Bears. Forte, in 4 out of his 5 playoff matchups, averaged 14.5 fantasy points per contest, and even on an off week, he still gave you 7 points. So Forte, many feel the tread is wearing off the tires, that he doesn't have it anymore, but he showed this year, especially for you fantasy owners, when it was money time, he showed you that he still does have quite a bit left in the tank. And then we're also talking about Todd Gurley, a guy who we really like. 10 out of 12 games in double digits for Gurley. 17.6 is what he averaged. And, man, just a great job by the rookie there. Doug Martin, he's another guy, 12.3 fantasy points in 3 out of his last 5 games. Even on the bad weeks, he averaged 7.5, so you'll certainly respect that there. A couple of the guys that stand out to you, Darren McFadden, 11.3 points per game in 3 out of his last 5. When he did not get double digits, still averaged 8 points per contest. And then Jonathan Stewart, I think he's a guy who owners sorely missed when he went out. Carolina's a team that likes to pound the football. He had double digits in week 13 and 14. Hard to imagine in weeks 15, 16, and 17 that he wasn't going to be able to do that as well. And now we scoop back up. Devonta Freeman, Adrian Peterson, those were your top point scorer at the running back position this year. Freeman, a little higher premium. Look, both of these guys averaged right around 13.5 points in 3 out of their last 5 games. But when Freeman was slowed down, he still gave you 6.5 points. That was in weeks 13 and 14. Adrian Peterson, 3.5. His were weeks 13 and 15 where he didn't produce. And that 3.5 represents a running back who is not a dual threat ability like Devonta Freeman, who's able to even keep his numbers modest if he doesn't have a great game. Now let's go ahead and move over to the wide receiver position. And I think you'll be a little bit surprised at the players who are at the top of the charts here. Now, again, this is not about who's the best fantasy wide receiver. This is not about who had the most points during the regular season. This is solely about what guys came up huge and played the biggest for you in weeks 13 through 17 when the money was on the line. Your most consistent receiver this year was actually Brandon Marshall. 13 out of 16 games, he had double digits. He averaged 17.25 points per contest in weeks 13 through 17. And on an off week, he gave you 7 points, so he still did a great job. How about Allen Robinson of the Jacksonville Jaguars? 4 out of 5 games, he's in double digits, averaging 18.75 per contest. In his one off week, he had 6 points as well. How about Eric Decker? I think this guy was the model of consistency here throughout the entire playoffs. All 5 games, he averaged 11 points per contest. That is slow and steady. How about Sammy Watkins of the Buffalo Bills? In 4 out of his 5 contests, 16.5 fantasy points per contest. Big time speed. You love Sammy Watkins, a guy who certainly is going to be peaking at the top 10 when it comes to fantasy receivers next year. And then you also take a look at a guy like Allen Robinson of the Jacksonville Jaguars, averaged 18.75, and I had 4 games in double digits, and I apologize, I did just speak on him. Now, you talk about Odell Beckham Jr., 3 out of 5 games, and really weeks 13, 14, and 15, did his thing, came on strong, was averaging 20.3 per contest, but after he got suspended for week 16, just wasn't the same in week 17, and really left owners hanging. How about DeAndre Hopkins? 3 out of his 5 last games, he's averaging 15.5 points per contest. And even on a bad day, he's still giving you 7.3 points. So you cannot complain about that. Antonio Brown, we're talking about Mr. Ant Banks himself. This guy is something else. In his 3 playoff games, or I should say in weeks 13 through 17, in the 3 games where he went off, he averaged 27 points per contest. That is about 8 to 9 points plus higher than any other player. So when when Ant Banks goes off, it's in a major way. There's only two other players who even averaged 20 points per contest when they were going off, and this is the last 5 weeks of the season. He also had 2 games where he didn't show up, but he still averaged 7 points. So that goes to show you the type of superstar that he is. He's still able to give you something when he doesn't get in the end zone. Julio Jones, your second-ranked receiver, did an excellent job as well. He had 3 games in the last 5 weeks where he's up in double digits, 11 out of 16 on the year. And on the games that he did not wind up in the top 10, he still had 85 receiving yards. So great job by him. And then Doug Baldwin of the Seattle Seahawks. I think this is the one guy here who really made it happen. 20 points per contest in the last 4 games of the season. And then he also had one off week, and that was week 17. So really week 13 through 16, that four-week window, you were able to ride Doug Baldwin, who was averaging right around 20 points per contest. Now let's take a look at some guys who are just not able to be as consistent. Larry Fitzgerald, only one out of his last five games in double digits. He ends up averaging 5.2 points. That's not going to get it done in the playoffs. You talk about a guy like Jarvis Landry of the Miami Dolphins, you know, 11 points per contest when he does well, but 7.25 when he does not do too well. And then you also have to talk about a guy like Demaryius Thomas, 15.6 fantasy points in three out of his last five games, but he also had two games where he only averaged 6 points per contest, so that's going to hurt you. Brandon Cooks, he's another guy that stands out, had three out of his last five in double digits where he was averaging 17.6 points per contest. But in the two outings where he did not fare too well, he still was able to put up some nice chunks of yardage for you. Now, when we move over to the we now move over to the tight end position, Rob Gronkowski. In his last five games, he had two games where he averaged 12.5 points, two games 4.5. So certainly you had to catch Gronk in the right weeks. Those were 14 and 15, 16 and 17. His production was way down, especially with the one-point outing the last game of the season against Miami. Jordan Reed, on the other hand, showed up for you, 20.6 points per contest in three out of his five games. But in weeks 13 and 17, only 3.5 points. And that's certainly a number that we don't want to have on our in our lineup when a championship is on the line. Gary Barnage, only one double-digit game, 14 points, and that came in week 14. Greg Olsen of the Chicago Bears. Look, this is a guy with two games of 11.5 points, three games of 3.5, and, you know, coming from the tight end position, that's the production that you're going to have to live with. You kind of see how these numbers are fluctuating up and down. We talked about Delanie Walker, three out of his five last games. He's 15 points or more when he's looking for when you look at weeks 14 and 16, where his numbers were not in double digits, still chipped in on average a nice 6 points. So that's the type of production that you want. Tyler Eifert missed extended time, so he was really only productive for you in 1 week. But in weeks 13, 15, 16, he was a no-show and just couldn't get the job done. He was averaging a measly 4 points per contest in those games. Travis Kelce, another tight end that let you down, only one double-digit game in his last five games, averaged just 3.5 fantasy points per contest when it counted the most. That certainly had to be very frustrating. You look at Rich Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers, and this is a guy who certainly benefited from the Hail Mary pass that Aaron Rodgers threw him against the Detroit Lions, had 13 and 14 points respectively in what could potentially be the last game, but Kelce in particular is a guy that, he's still trying to find his way a bit. We know Kansas City, as I alluded to earlier, struggling a bit in the red zone. You also like what Ben Watson did for you, two out of his last five, he was at 10.5 points. Two games he didn't perform that well. He was at 5.5, but he really killed owners in week 16 where he did not have single point at all. Now, I apologize. I was speaking about Rich Rodgers. I got a little bit off track there. I was telling you that he had averaged 15.5 points in weeks 13 and 17. But in weeks 14, 15, and 16, those money rounds, he did not have a single point, and that is going to hurt. That's the production you can't afford to have. Another guy who stepped up at the end was certainly Zach Ertz. Just got a big contract from the Philadelphia Eagles, averaged 12.7 points in three out of his last five games. And in the games he did not play well, still pumped in 7.5 points to your fantasy lineup. And then when we talk about our kickers, Steven Gostkowski gave you two games where he averaged double digits. Graham Gano did not have one single game in the playoffs where he had double digits. Blair Walsh had three games in the playoffs of double digits. Josh Brown, only one game. Steven Hauschka, only two. Robbie Gould, only one. Justin Tucker, He had two, Cairo Santos one, Brandon McManus two. So you could see here how Blair Walsh ended up being the guy. He was the only kicker to have three or more games with double-digit points coming from the kicker position, and it was at a higher premium at 14.5 points. Don't go anywhere. It's the NFL Exporter. You listen to the Extra Points Fantasy Football Show. We'll be right back with more. All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Extra Points Fantasy Football Show. Lance Goodman from NFLExporter.com. And let's go ahead and hop into another segment here. Let's take a look at this. Excuse me. Let's take a look at the fantasy football stock market. Now, throughout the course of the season, you were able to go to NFLExporter.com, go to the fantasy football page, and take a look at what players were trending up, what players were trending down on the fantasy football stock market. Well, now let's take a preview look into the 2016 season. I'm going to tell you about some players who draft stock has certainly risen, meaning that where they were drafted in 2015, for 2016, they're going to be drafted much higher. Those are the players whose stock is on the rise. And then we got player stock who is falling. These are players who were drafted high this year, and I expect for them to be taken in lower rounds. When you talk about quarterbacks, I think you got to start with Cam Newton of the Carolina Panthers. Set an NFL record, becoming the first quarterback in history to throw for 30 TD passes, run for 10. He counted for 45 touchdowns this year. Cam Newton will be back at the top of the charts. I don't think there's any question. After his rookie year, he was a guy that people were grabbing early. Last couple years has not been the same fantasy quarterback, but you look at the way he threw the football this year, Calvin Benjamin will be back, potentially maybe a Super Bowl is in tow at this point. The Super Bowl is a few weeks away, so Cam Newton's a guy who's going to shoot up the charts, and owners are certainly going to be licking their chops to get their hands on early. Blake Bortles of the Jaguars, Kirk Cousins of the Redskins, Derek Carr of the Oakland Raiders, Marcus Mariota of the Tennessee Titans, Brock Osweiler, I believe he'll be getting a start next year for the Denver Broncos, Tyrod Taylor and Jameis Winston. All of those quarterbacks are going to be drafted much higher. And I think the main thing, if you look at Osweiler, Mariota, Tyrod Taylor, Jameis Winston, Blake Bortles, Kirk Cousins, and potentially Derek Carr. He's a guy who certainly was on some people's radar. But with the exception of Cam Newton, none of these guys were considered starters or looked at by owners as starters. That will not be the case next year. All of those guys I expect to see in the owner's starting lineups. Moving over to the running back position now, Devonta Freeman of the Atlanta Falcons, Doug Martin of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We know the rookies, Todd Gurley, and they'll be sophomores this upcoming season. But Todd Gurley of the Rams, David Johnson, if he gets the full workload out in Arizona, you know, those first four guys had spectacular years. And the main thing that you notice there, with the exception of Gurley, who can catch out of the backfield, but he's not utilized as much. But certainly for Devonta Freeman, Doug Martin, David Johnson, the dual threat ability is there. And I'm telling you, that is the trend. That is the direction that fantasy football is going. It's been like that. I'm not saying that this is some new phenomenon, but when you think about the running back position now, how important is it to have a dual threat running back to where if it's a difficult day running the football on the ground, here's a guy that can get some money out the backfield, potentially get a receiving touchdown, and even if the game gets a little bit out of hand and his team has to turn into pretty much pass mode, he does not have to come off the football. I think those are the running backs that guys are going to be looking to covet. Darren McFadden for the Dallas Cowboys with Joe Randall out the way. Christian Michael's no longer there. I think he's a clear-cut starter. There'll be no debating it. And as I alluded to, with Dez Bryant and Tony Romo back healthy, defenses won't be able to stack the box. I really like next season for Darren McFadden as he takes care of his body and works hard in the offseason in front of that, running behind that Cowboys offensive line. There's certainly a huge amount of upside there. I love what Jonathan Stewart was able to do for you this year. Finally was able to get through the majority of the season healthy. And he's another guy. Look, in weeks 13 and 14, had 14 and 15 points respectively. Did not play the last three regular season games, but he's a beast. He's right in line. And again, we finally got a chance to see him fully healthy. If he would have played those last three games, he would have been another top 10 running back. Here's a couple other rookies who will be sophomores next year that I'm going to throw at you that if they're getting a full workload, they're certainly going to have a huge bump up. I'm talking about Jeremy Langford of the Chicago Bears. If Matt Forte is not there, he'll get the full workload. There's going to be a change in the offensive philosophy with Adam Gase gone, but regardless of who's been the coordinator there, Chicago runs an offense, and Jay Cutler likes to throw it out the backfield, and Langford's got the nice set of hands. We've seen that this year. Thomas Rawls, without question, this guy's going to be a hot commodity. If you think about Marshawn Lynch, you're hearing rumors of retirement. He was banged up all year. If he's gone, Rawls is going to be a guy who shoots up the ladders. And then Javorius Allen. Look, I like what he did. Justin Forsett, kind of getting on a tail end of his career now. Really had a breakout year last year with Gary Kubiak there running that zone blocking scheme, something that Forsett had a lot of familiarity with when Kubiak was back in Houston. But another team is kind of, you know, a changing of a guard. The Ravens are certainly rebuilding. I would not be surprised to see Javorius Allen, another guy who's got a great set of hands out of the backfield, who could potentially do some damage for you. T.J. Yeldon, he'll be a sophomore as well. He gets the full workload for Jacksonville. Tons of upside there for him. You have to like that. Now that Arian Foster no longer in Houston, I think Al Blue is focused in the offseason. I believe, I do not know, they still have Jonathan Grimes over there, but he should be the guy who gets the full workload for Houston. And I think now with the Texans knowing that coming into the season, they could be a little bit more prepared. Moving over to some wide receivers now, there's no question that Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, those guys are certainly going to be drafted much earlier. DeAndre Hopkins, he proved his worth. He's now in that top, you know, 10 wide receiver with the likes of, you know, Julio Jones and Antonio Brown and Brandon Marshall and those guys. So you're certainly going to see them moving up much higher. Eric Decker, Brandon Marshall, both of those guys are going to be up the ladder now. Brandon Cooks, Sammy Watkins, Jeremy Maclin, all of those guys, very effective years, really were hot down the stretch. You can best believe. Now, Cooks may not be a guy drafted higher because he was going this year. He had an outstanding preseason. He was going right around the third to fourth rounds, depending on how deep your league was. So he may not, you know, I don't think he's going to be a guy that owners take in the second round, but certainly once those top-tier receivers come off, there's no question he's going to be in that second group again, especially if Drew Brees comes back. Those guys have the chemistry down now. They should be able to get it clicking a little bit earlier in the seasons. Sammy Watkins, there's no doubt about it. And this is going to be a topic that's up for high discussion. Where do you take him? And I think, to be quite honest, the skill set that I've seen from him, he's got to be right there in the argument, you know, with DeAndre Hopkins and Dez Bryant and, you know, all those guys. I know he doesn't have the longevity with consistency, but use the eye test, especially his ability to get deep. He can put, you know, 12 or 13 points on the board in a blink of an eye. So you have to like what Sammy Watkins brings. And then Jeremy Maclin. Nice job by Maclin. I don't want to say he was inconsistent, but Kansas City's passing game was a bit inconsistent to start the season off. Maclin had three good games, three games that did not so well. And a lot of times it's about matchups. You know, he played against Jonathan Joseph. He played against Aqib Talib in that Denver defense. So some of his games that he didn't play too well in, those were matchups that really no receivers played that well in. But got it going down the stretch, ended with 87 catches, almost 1,100 yards, 8 TDs. I like the upside. Him and Alex Smith can now put the work in the offseason. Kansas City now has a big-time weapon in the passing game. Jeremy Maclin is a guy that's going to get drafted much sooner. Same holds true for Michael Crabtree, Amari Cooper, the two outstanding, let me call them outstanding, the two talented wide receivers for the Oakland Raiders. Crabtree, the veteran, doing his thing, working out of the number two receiver spot. Amari Cooper, great rookie year, up over 1,000 yards. Talked to the guy, and, you know, he certainly is a guy who said he's, you know, he's going to put the work in the offseason, take better care of his body, get with one-on-one time in with David Carr. Derek Carr, we've seen his ability. There's no doubt this kid's a monster. Martavius Bryant, Julian Edelman, you know, I think we all knew that Bryant was super talented. He's working opposite Antonio Brown, gets a lot of one-on-one coverage, got the big-time 4-3 speed, so he's a big-time playmaker. We've seen him have that nice playoff game against the Denver Broncos, showing that he can carry the weight. So I think with he was suspended to start the year. I think if he works hard in the offseason, and I don't think that Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger are going to allow him to do anything but that, he should come back and fully focus. And again, a guy who should be ready to contribute to your team from day one. Julian Edelman, I don't think people are going to overlook him anymore. He's Tom Brady's top weapon in the passing game. Brandon LaFell just seems like he can't get open. Danny Amendola, you know, a bit inconsistent working out the slot. Edelman, the longest running track history with Tom Brady. You can obviously see the chemistry and camaraderie there. Tyler Lockett, Stephon Diggs, a couple rookies for the Seahawks and Vikings, respectively. Lockett's going to be working opposite Doug Baldwin. I think he's the kid puts the work in the offseason. Him and Russell Wilson certainly got some nice chemistry going. And Stephon Diggs, you know, he's a guy that Minnesota's in desperate need of a big-time playmaker in the passing game. And when given the opportunity, this kid certainly showed that he has ability. You like his route running, but he has a mean, nasty streak to him, and I think you like that the most. This kid wants to compete, and he's got some nice moves, not easy to bring down once he gets his hands on the football after the catch. Keenan Allen, I think he's going to be a very interesting prospect, was on a record-setting pace, had the most catches by any receiver in NFL history through the first, I believe, 8 or 9 games of the season. Unfortunately, caught the hip injury, which put him out, but dynamic playmaker, got back on his feet after a sophomore slump. And this guy, I think, will be ready to roll full steam ahead. Phillip Rivers really missed him, especially inside of the red zone. Dorial Green Beckham for the Tennessee Titans. Look, nice draft pick. Came on late in the season. Tennessee does not have a number one receiver right now. We know Kendall Wright. I think he's a guy. If Tennessee is smart, they move him over to the slot. Let his quickness and give linebackers and safeties problems, and let Beckham work on the outside. Has the big time height, showed the playmaking ability, and again, we've seen Marcus Mariota be very accurate with the football. I really like the prospects for this kid if he can put the work in the offseason. A couple other rookies that should climb the ladders and at least make it onto your roster as well. I expect for Devin Funchess and Devonta Parker. Funchess certainly has been making great strides and efforts. We've seen him catch a touchdown in the NFC Championship game. He should be starting opposite Kelvin Benjamin next year, or perhaps doing a lot of work. Teddy Ginn Jr. likely will still be there. Got a lot of weapons in Carolina, but I like what I see out of this kid who's got the big frame and is really learning the wide receiver position, was playing a tight end at the University of Michigan. And then Devonta Parker, I think he solidified himself as the number two receiver. Jarvis Landry gets all of the work coming out of the slot, but Parker certainly showed that he has some nice ability on the outside. Good feel for the game. Now that he understands what it takes to play in the NFL, should have a little bit better understanding in the playbook. Get the offseason work in. Talented players. You see those wide receivers. A hell of a lot of depth there. Larry Fitzgerald, I didn't mention him. I think he's another guy, along with Michael Floyd and John Brown. All of those guys are going to get bumped up the ranks as well. Moving over to your tight ends. Look, we know that Jordan Reed, Gary Barnage, Delanie Walker, Tyler Eifert, Ben Watson. Won't spend a lot of time on them because they got covered in our analytics segment, but those guys, certainly a ton of talent. All of those guys are certainly going to be picked up much earlier than they were. The same should hold true for Julius Thomas. Came into the season battling some injuries, but with Hearns and Robinson on the outside, this guy should really have a nice opportunity to do a lot of damage in the middle of the field, especially in the red zone. And then Will Tye, you know, Larry Donald, not able to get the job done for the New York Giants, end up missing the last 5 or 6 games due to injury. Tye came in, paid dividends. We know that Eli Manning loves the tight end position. We wondered why Larry Donald wasn't more effective. Well, Will Tye came in, and maybe it was a hidden gem. Now they see what he has to offer. Likely going to be a tight end competition, but I think Will Tye showed he's the better tight end, and I think he's the guy who owners will want to covet. Now let's take a look at what players are dropping down on the stock market. These are players that were drafted, this year. And next year, or the 2016, the upcoming draft, I should say, you certainly expect for owners, unless we see some tremendous strides in the offseason. These are players that you certainly think owners are going to shy away from picking up. Matt Ryan of the Atlanta Falcons, only 1 game of 20-plus points this year, really struggled down the stretch. And unless they can get some other weapons, there's no way that owners are going to be investing money in Matt Ryan, a guy who just can't get it done. That's just the bottom line. Can't get it done. Teddy Bridgewater, huge disappointment. Only 14 TD passes, 9 interceptions. They've got to get the passing game figured out in Minnesota. He's a guy that owners certainly have lost trust in. Peyton Manning, he may not even be playing next year if Denver can win the Super Bowl. Even if he does, I think owners see the writing on the wall. He'll be a guy who will be on the waiver wire and probably utilized in matchups only. Colin Kaepernick, another guy. We'll get into in-depth about Kaepernick some other time. I do not believe that Chip Kelly coming to San Francisco is just going to all of a sudden have Colin Kaepernick be this great quarterback. The 49ers need help at wide receiver, or the results are going to be the same. You look at some running backs, Frank Gore in Indianapolis. He'll be a year older. Now, look, with Andrew Luck back into the fold, if that passing game can be high-powered like we expect, yeah, certainly Gore will have some value, but he's not going to be taken in round 4 or 5 like we've seen this year. Jeremy Hill, C.J. Anderson. Now, look, for Jeremy Hill, new offensive coordinator, so you don't know what the flavor is going to be there. He could be the feature back again. That's really what hurt him. He had to split time with Gio Bernard. For C.J. Anderson, same thing. You never know. He's as the season has progressed on, he's looked like the better running back than Ronnie Hillman. Hillman looked like the better back at one time, but Anderson, the back they like to use out of the backfield, has a better set of hands, and also is a better runner between the tackles. So C.J. Anderson, Jeremy Hill, those could be guys who kind of slip in the draft, but if they get the full workload, certainly could be productive. Eddie Lacy, we don't know what to expect. Now, we know he was overweight this year. That's something that you expect to change. But drafting him in the first round, I just add, you know, maybe the second or third round, depending on how things work out. But he's a guy who really left owners hanging. I mentioned to you Justin Forsett. In my opinion, his days are numbered in Baltimore. I think Javorius Allen, the younger, stronger, more versatile back, more explosive back, I think is his time to shine. Alfred Morris, he was a mess this year. Couldn't even find the end zone or what he had. One touchdown, pathetic. I think he's another guy that if Mac Jones can turn the corner, I think Morris is on his way out in Washington. Melvin Gordon for the Chargers, he just could not put up anything this year. Again, Phillip Rivers will be a year older. Maybe the Chargers focus on the offensive line, but they just could not run the football this year. Gordon didn't even touch pay dirt. I think that's an absolute travesty. Andre Ellington, he's lost his starting spot now, so you don't know where he's going to fit into the fold. Bishop Sankey for the Tennessee Titans. Not that there was a ton of huge expectation, but he did absolutely nothing. And we've seen rookies Antonio Andrews and David Cobb hog the playing time. I think those two guys will determine who will be the starter next year. Randall Cobb, again, another slippery slope here. You know, Jordy Nelson will be back into the fold. Maybe that opens things up, but Randall Cobb, a huge disappointment this year. You certainly don't think owners are going to be picking him up in the third round. Mike Wallace, not that, again, that he was high up on the draft board, but did absolutely nothing for Minnesota. And I think he's a guy that owners are just, at this point, he's just an afterthought. I think the same would hold true for Brandon LaFell. How can you play with Tom Brady and not be productive? Man, he was a huge disappointment. Antonio Gates, Jason Witten, those guys now getting on the tail end of their career, much slower, still will have some good games. But, you know, if Gates can be healthy, he really struggled with injuries, started off the season suspended, so he wasn't effective. Jason Witten, once Tony Romo went out, you knew that it was doomsday for him. Kyle Rudolph, there was a lot of hope, especially in the preseason when you've seen Teddy Bridgewater targeted him a lot, but just could not put a full show together. Jimmy Graham of the Seattle Seahawks, I think he's a guy, unless we see something in preseason, who's going to be drafted much lower. Vernon Davis of the Denver Broncos, don't even know if he's going to be a Bronco next year. And I mentioned to you Larry Donald of the New York Giants, he may not be a starter next week as well. Look, that's going to wrap it up for today's show. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Again, go to NFLExporter.com. Now, look, we're in postseason mode there, so the weekly update are not going on how they were during the season. We're pretty much updating the site, kind of keeping in line with the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl. So pretty much once the Super Bowl comes to an end, then the week following, we're going to put the final touches on the website and kind of leave it there for owners to be able to open up back in July. So, you know, I'll make sure that you get the email blast. Make sure to go to Facebook.com, NFL Exporter. Make sure to go to Twitter, follow NFL Exporter, so you can keep in the loop on everything that's going on. We've got one more show. I'll be doing a part three to this three-part series to bring a full end to the fantasy football season. As always, I'm your host, the NFL Exporter. Thank you for joining me. I catch you guys on Facebook. I'll catch you on Twitter. And don't forget the email is info@NFLExporter.com. Thank you for listening to Extra Points, the fantasy football show, where you get expert fantasy advice for champions.